This is Jerome Davis of Burning Coal Theater Company, and this is the first regular podcast focused on theater in Raleigh, North Carolina. Today is Wednesday, October 7th, and today's guest is Kendall Riley. Kendall has a deep connection to North Carolina, although she lives in New York City right now. She was born in Lumberton. She went to Duke University. She has performed at Burning Coal in the past and is, in fact, a member of Burning Coal Theater Company. Kendall, welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Oh, yeah. We're excited about it. We're opening Burning Coal and Only Child Ariel Theater of Brooklyn, New York, are collaborating on a production called Asylum, which opens on October 15th and runs through November 1st here at the Murphy School. Can you tell us, first of all, Kendall, a little bit about how you got connected with Only Child?
Sure. I had been doing theater and Ariel for theater for many years, but Ariel for only about 2 years. And I met a woman named Nikki Miller, who is directing Asylum and also co-writing it. In 2009, we were working on a project. I was cast in a production. It was an Orpheus Eurydice tale. And Nikki was the Ariel choreographer for that show. And we met, we instantly hit it off and realized that we had very similar tastes in theater, Ariel, and how we really wanted to combine those to make a new form of Ariel theater. And the production, funnily enough, ended up going in a very different direction. It was postponed, and then it ended up being more of a live feed film production, which neither of us in the end were involved with. But the connection with Nikki, we just continued to work together, train together, and realized that we just wanted to start playing around with the possibilities of using the aerial space, the vertical space, to heighten the drama of stories. And it still feels a bit like an experiment. We've been doing this for about 5-6 years now, working our way from small pieces, 15-minute pieces, up to this, which is our first full-length production.
What attracts you to aerial theater, Kendall?
For me, it's first and foremost, I think, the challenge of just, I've always been drawn to things that seem impossible. And when I first saw Ariel, a friend of mine was a silks artist, and I went to see her, and I just wanted to try it. I wanted to do it. I just couldn't understand how people could live in that space so comfortably. Mm-hmm. And I have a background in competitive gymnastics, so I was very much into things that were physically driven. And I'd put that aside for many years while I pursued acting, and then I realized they needn't live apart. You know, there can be theater that embraces strong physicality, risk-taking. To me, Ariel encapsulates a lot of what I think is important and necessary and interesting about theater, which is that it involves a massive amount of trust and confidence and risk-taking. I think that the audience watching Ariel immediately takes on the emotional the space of the actor, mm-hmm. which includes that the drive, the fear. I think all of that goes into the character and into the storytelling, and I think the audience feels that secondhand, but hopefully it's visceral theater, because the reality of being in the air is one of high stakes, and I think
very
really strong theater involves mm-hmm. really high stakes.
Mm-hmm. Very, very true. We did a production here at Burning Coal about 3 years ago, Shakespeare's Henry V on trapeze, and that was a very successful production for us, and it was also very much Shakespeare. The text was cut some. The play was about an hour and a half long, but it was at its core Shakespeare, and I don't think anyone walked out of that production feeling that they had missed something. In the case of Asylum, though, it's a slightly different animal. This is a new story that you and Nikki have conceived and written, and the company is devising it. Is that a fair word to use?
Yeah, I would say it's partial devising theater. Uh-huh. And I say partial because normally in a devising process, a group of actors will get together in a space, and together they will all come up with the theme or the story or a starting point. Mm-hmm. And within that, together as a whole, they will develop each other's their own characters and how the story goes along. This is a little bit different in that Nikki and I brought the story to the table. Uh-huh. We set the space in an asylum. We were inspired by these photographs of an abandoned mental institution, and we knew that that should be the setting for this story. And then we started working with a storyboard. We actually initially set this story on a different group of actors a couple years ago as a very short piece, about 15 minutes. And we learned from that experience, and we knew that there was enough material that we wanted to explore further. But for various reasons, scheduling and otherwise, we had to develop it a year later with a different group of actors. Mm-hmm. So we did a version that was about 38 minutes last year, and four of the six actors who were in this production were in that version. Mm-hmm. And they were very much crucial in developing their own characters. And then this time around, we have two new performers, which is very exciting to us. They bring different skill sets and different ideas to the table.
Michaela Sococcio and Dion Relaford Lee. Is that right?
Yeah.
They're both local artists.
They've been wonderful. And so that in Dion's case, he's actually taking over a role that was already created by another actor, but also making it his own.
Right.
Michaela's roles, she has multiple roles, and they're entirely new for this production. Mm. So a lot of devising work has gone into her new roles. But just in general, I mean, even though we have established, before we came into this process, a storyboard of sorts, mm-hmm. the actors in this group have really helped shape where the story has gone. And the skills and the interests of each individual performer really shine, I think, because the character is what these people bring mm-hmm. to the table. So
it's not a linear text-based play in the way that, for instance, Henry V was, but is it possible to relate, without giving too much away, what the story is?
Sure. we've actually, it's funny you mentioned that, we've played with text and even dialogue in it over the years, and we've always removed it.
Right. Yeah.
Basically, it is about a group of inmates in an asylum and two people who once worked there. And it follows their experiences in the asylum, but also flashes back to what actually brought them to the asylum. And the interest really came out of these photographs, where we saw evidence of people, suitcases, belongings, graffiti, unmade beds, you know, these places when they were destroyed or abandoned, they were pretty much left there. No one came along and took away the debris, so they had medical files just out in the open.
People's personal files?
Absolutely, personal files, and then even personal, you know, jewelry, very important things that these people once had were just left there.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought, it just sparked, you know, this curiosity of who these people were who spent the majority of their lives inside the walls of this one building, who hardly ever made it out. It seems that we've forgotten about these people. They're often buried in unmarked graves. People, family members who come along and try to track and find these people can't because there are no markers. There's no record of these people, and that was really upsetting to us. And we felt that it was almost a duty to even though they're not actual, you know, factual stories, mm-hmm. to just shed some light and some interest on these people who
right.
we just don't know much about.
Right. It's a concern that's been going on for some time and seems to be growing in the United States, and that is that period of time in the late 60s and into the 70s when the country sort of collectively decided that that we could afford to not pay attention to the mentally ill. And of course, the results of that are seen in things like the mass shootings that we seem to have to focus on every few weeks, if not even more regularly. So Kendall, tell me a little bit about yourself. You grew up in Lumberton, is that
mm-hmm,
right?
That's right.
Tell me about yourself. How does a young lady in Lumberton, North Carolina, get interested in theater?
Well, late in life, actually. Like I said, I was very much involved in gymnastics as a child. That was my main interest. And fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how you look at it, it is not a lifelong career endeavor.
No. So you've taken the traditional gymnastics to theater approach
exactly.
to your career. Yeah.
Well, I went to a university, I went to Duke, that did not have a gymnastics team.
Right.
And so it's sort of that area of my life, I felt something very missing.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I was going to go into architecture. I was really interested in math and spaces. And freshman year, I saw my very first play ever, and it was called Arcadia by Tom Stoppard.
Yes.
What a doozy that was for a first show.
The first play I ever acted in was a Tom Stoppard play.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Talk about thrown into the fire.
Yeah.
And I just was captivated. I remember immediately wanting to not just be a part of theater, but I wanted to be inside the play. I wanted to be on the stage mm-hmm. acting. And I don't think I had any real concept of what acting was when I had that thought. I just remember thinking, that's where I belong. So I took my first acting class, I think the end of my freshman year, with a local artist, actually, named Christine Morris, and she was a wonderful
Jeff
professor.
Jeff West's wife?
Yes, actually, Jeff West directed that Arcadia.
That production, yes, that's right. I forgot about that.
So both of them were my professors, and I feel so blessed because my introduction to theater was with these wonderful teachers.
Yeah.
And I auditioned for my very first play at the end of my freshman year, and first of all, I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't know you needed a monologue or a headshot or a resume. I just showed up.
Some of the actors who come in for our auditions are in the same situation. But
And they cast me. I don't know why, but they did.
What was the play?
It was an Aaron Sorkin play called Hidden in This Picture.
I don't know that.
It's a comedy. It's a great play. It's short. I think it's a one act. But And I just, from day one, I adored it. And started auditioning for more plays. And then when I graduated, I stuck around Durham for about 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I worked as a company manager for theater previews at Duke, is no longer there, but used to be a breeding ground for Broadway musicals.
Mm-hmm.
And also started acting in the area.
Sometimes non-musicals too, right?
Actually plays as well.
Yeah. Birdie, I think.
Birdie was there. Yeah, Little Women was there.
Right.
And then a funny thing happened. I was working on a production called Women's Minion. It was actually at Duke. And
with Diane Gilboa.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. She produced it along with Street Signs, mm-hmm. Joe Meagle directed.
Yeah.
And
I saw that production.
Oh, you did?
Yes, I did.
Oh, you were there.
Yeah.
They had a reading of it in New York, and Diane brought me up just to help out with, you know, paperwork and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up meeting the director of that reading, was casting a play, needed an Irish maid, which happened to be my specialty. I think I'd played about 4 or 5 in a row, and cast me in a show in New York. And I remember saying, well, he called me back at that time. And I remember saying, but you know, I don't live here. And he said, no, I'm calling you back. And
yeah.
I was like, okay, I'll be there.
Yeah.
So that ended up bringing me to New York, and I realized that it was time to really challenge myself and see if I could make a go of a living in the theater.
How long have you been in New York now?
9 years.
Very good.
Yeah.
And you have had quite a successful career so far in the theater in New York.
Thank you.
Well, I think so.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about that. You worked with Tova Feldshuh in a one-person show. You understudied her.
Yes, that was just 2 years ago. There's a play, a wonderful play, called Golda's Balcony by William Gibson.
Yeah.
And it is actually the longest-running one-woman show in the history of Broadway. It ran for 15 months, and Tova played the role that entire period without an understudy, believe it or not.
Right.
She never missed a show in 15 months. And then she's been touring it ever since, and she was doing it down in D.C., and it was a stipulation for them that they have an understudy for that particular theater.
Right.
And because I had worked with her earlier on a production called A Reina's Vow, and I'd also sort of helped her with the lines for Golda's Balcony for years, actually. So I kind of knew it. Never in my wildest dreams did I imagine I would ever go on in the role.
No.
But the opportunity availed itself, and I'm so grateful I got the chance to go on twice in D.C.
What theater were you at?
Theater J.
Uh-huh. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's wonderful. There are not many actresses who have an Irish maid and Golda Meir on their resume, so that's quite a broad range,
yeah.
Isn't it? So good. And then you also play at least one musical instrument. You play the violin.
Yeah, several. I play violin and piano are the ones I would say I'm very competent at.
Yeah.
And then recently I've been diddling around on the ukulele, and the guitar.
The uke is the instrument du jour.
I didn't know it was so trendy.
Well, it travels easily, right? I guess my point is that you have a number of skills beyond whatever acting means, you know, walk and talk, I guess. But but you also have musicianship, and you have acrobatics and aerial work. And then that helps you, I imagine. That broadens the possibilities for you as an actor.
Absolutely. In fact, I didn't really pick up these new instruments until recently. And that it just happened that I grew up playing the violin and the piano, mm-hmm. and having this acrobatic background and dance, and, you know, before theater was even on the horizon. So
right.
That was just luck. But then I started to realize that it really does help you stand out, particularly now. You're doing a lot of productions, musicals now, where the actors are playing their own instruments. And
the John Doyle model.
Yeah.
From that Sweeney Todd about 10 years ago now, I guess. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And things are cropping up now. Aerials become, I won't say mainstream, but people know what it is now, much more than, say, 10 years ago when I started and when Nikki started. We were like the odd ducks. No one knew what it was. And
right.
Now it's on Broadway, it's off Broadway, it's in the regional theater. So that again was just luck. I certainly never dreamed that it would become a skill that would help me in my theater career.
Well, it's very theatrical. It's a life and death situation. I was thinking when you talked about the play that had started out as a play and become more of a film project, that mm-hmm. that aerial work on film is not nearly as exciting. It's sort of like magic, right? If you do magic on television, what's the point? You know, because you can stop the camera and move the girl around in the box and then turn the camera back on. So there's something very theatrical and very immediate about aerial or any other kind of physical work mm-hmm. like that. So that makes absolute logic. What would you like to tell our listening audience about Asylum before we sign off today?
I hope that they're interested in checking out a really new form. I think part of what makes this show interesting is we're playing with a lot of different means of storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
Like Jerry said, there's no dialogue in the show. There is text, but there's no dialogue. And when you remove the first and foremost means of storytelling that we have as theater makers, it really challenges you to provide narration and character work in other ways. And it's really exciting for us as actors, and hopefully the mystery, the challenge of putting the puzzle pieces together will be fun for the audience. I always believe that you should trust the audience to be able to figure things out for themselves, and I really believe it's more fun when you give them a task to
do. Well, I couldn't agree more about that. The Asylum runs about an hour and 10 minutes, an hour and 15 minutes, something like that. It opens on October 15th, and it runs here at the Murphy School Thursdays through Saturdays at 7:30 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. through November 1st. Tickets are available at burningcoal.org, or just give us a call if you'd like at 919-834-4001. My guest today has been Kendall Riley. Kendall, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.